Hello, and welcome to another edition of Out of Sight XYZ, the internationally award-winning program featuring information for the blind community from the blind community. I'm Vince Lombardi, along with your host, Jason Rufo. On today's program, Jason travels to the Lebanon Valley Speedway in upstate New York to bring you coverage of the 7th annual IROC 500. The IROC, that's E-Y-E, is a street stock car race, teaming vision-impaired drivers with sighted co-pilots who verbally direct their teammate around the raceway. This year, 19 driver and coach teams competed against one another in a sprint to take the checkered flag and collect trophies and prizes. While the race provides blind participants with the opportunity to get behind the wheel and put their driving skills to the test, the ultimate purpose of the event is to raise money for Camp Abilities, a sports camp for blind and blind-deaf children. Guests on today's program include Don Daugherty, IROC event organizer, and Dr. Lauren Lieberman, director and founder of Camp Abilities. Later, IROC driver Lee Stone and his daughter and co-driver Heather Stone will stop by to share their thoughts and experiences about past IROC 500 events. Not only will they describe what it's like out on the track, but we will have the opportunity to ride along with them as they compete in the race. Finally, this year's winner and two-time champion of the IROC 500, Marty Kelly, will join us to discuss his passion of auto racing. All that and more is coming up on this edition of Out of Sight XYZ. And now here's Jason with IROC organizer Don Daugherty and founder of Camp Abilities, Dr. Lauren Lieberman.
Folks, thanks for joining the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, before we get into the IROC, its past history and involvement with Camp Abilities, I'd like to just ask each of you if you could tell us about yourselves. And I'd like to start with Don. Are you the chief planning coordinator?
This year I am, yeah. In the past, it's always been done by PIX 106. They've always been able to do it, but this year they haven't been able to get into it. So I contacted Lebanon Valley, and they said they still wanted to do it if I'd be willing to help. So pulled what I've done from the past, and we're trying it this year.
Lauren, how about yourself? Where are you from?
I'm from Westchester, Pennsylvania, and currently I live in Brockport, New York, and I teach at SUNY Brockport, and I'm a professor in adapted physical education. I've been running Camp Abilities for 12 years. This will be our 12th summer.
For our listeners today that have never heard of the IROC 500, Don, can you explain the event, what's going to take place today, and its fundraising purpose?
This whole race is really just to, it's to give the blind a chance, an opportunity to drive, first of all, and also to raise funds to be donated to Camp Abilities. Really, it all started years ago with just a radio station talking on air and said, wouldn't it be something? I wonder if blind people could drive. And so they put it out there, and a racetrack called up and said, you know, they'd be willing to donate the track if they could get the drivers. And we had about 30 drivers the first year, blind drivers that wanted to drive, and we took it from there.
What happens out on the track? Are the drivers accompanied by a coach driver? Can you explain
how
that works?
Yeah, this year we have 19 blind drivers, and they each get a sighted driver that goes on, that, otherwise they're co-pilot is what it's called. They're not allowed to touch the wheels. It's all just the drivers. What they do is just direct them left, right, faster, slower, that type of thing. That's all they're allowed to do in the car. We do two heats, 10 cars in a heat. And then we take the top five from the first and second heat, and then we do the championship round at the end. And then the winner gets about a 3-foot, 4-foot trophy. They all get participation trophies for being in the event, too. But the main thing is seeing their smiles on their faces when they get out of the cars. They just love it, and they look forward, and they're calling me to come every year now. So they really look forward to it.
No, I can imagine. Well, how's the race grown over the years? This is the seventh running of the IROC this year?
This is the seventh, yeah. It's been at Fonda Speedway for the last six. They can hold a lot more people here at Lebanon Valley. Covers a lot more of an area, and we're hoping it's going to be bigger and better than ever.
Turning our attention to you, Lauren, since we've mentioned here the fundraising purpose of the IROC is to raise money for Camp Abilities, Can you tell us a little bit about Camp Abilities, where it is, and what some of its past history involves?
For sure. In 1996, it was my first year teaching at SUNY Brockport, and I teach undergraduate students how to teach children with disabilities. And I realized that throughout their whole educational career, my students would never see a child who was blind unless we created an opportunity. So I applied for a grant, and I got $13,000, and we started this camp with 27 kids with visual impairments. After 1996, the camp grew, it doubled, and we had over 50 kids the second year, got some more funding, and then every year I've actually kind of limited it to 50 or 55 kids, because it's, if you think about the magnitude of 50 children with specialists and interpreters and nurses, it actually cost us over $75,000 for that 1 week. And so, you know, we charge the kids a tuition, but it would be exorbitant if we really got everything we needed just from the families. So we fundraise the difference, and without the IROC, it would be very difficult to hold the camp to the standard that we hold it now.
So you said that the camp is 1 week a year, and it's for blind deaf children, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that takes place on the campus?
Yep, it's on the SUNY Brockport campus, and we stay in the dorms. We eat in the dorms and in the cafeteria, and the counselors are undergraduate and graduate students from all over the country. Mm-hmm. So they're learning how to teach kids with visual impairments during the week.
So not only do children get the opportunity to attend camp, but you're also training a lot of people that in the future will be working with blind
exactly.
and blind deaf.
Exactly, and that's
children.
One of the purposes of camp is to train teachers how to teach children with visual impairments. And then they go on to teach other people how to teach children with visual impairments.
What are some of the activities that children can participate in?
Oh, that's a great question. We set it up so they're mostly sports that kids do with the United States Association for Blind Athletes. So USABA is in the National Organization for Blind Sports, and they provide judo, swimming, track and field, gymnastics, tandem biking, goalball, beat baseball, and bowling, for definitely bowling. And Don is actually in charge of our bowling, so that's one of our favorite sports. And at nighttime, they do more recreational things like rollerblading, archery, canoeing, basketball, horseback riding, rock climbing. So it's a great, I mean, the nice thing about it is every single day, these kids are doing things they've never done before.
With all the activities that are going on at Camp Abilities, there's, you know, pretty clear here that it has to be fully staffed. What's the ratio of staff member to camper?
And oh, great question. We provide a one-to-one because teaching a child with a visual impairment often is very tactile and very physical, so it'd be hard to teach more than one child at once. And so for the campers, for example, we have 54 kids coming this year. We have at least 54 counselors. And then we have, at each sport, we have at least two specialists. For example, at track and field, we have two of the specialists are actually Paralympians. They're visually impaired, and they've been to the Paralympics. And one of them is an adapted physical education teacher. Mm-hmm. And they write a lesson plan, just like any teacher would. And they run the lesson so that the counselors who are teaching the kids understand what's being taught. As a matter of fact, our aquatics director is the guru on adapted aquatics, and she's just in her second edition of her textbook on adapted aquatics programming. So
wow.
We're very fortunate to have her all the way up from Delaware to come to Camp Abilities.
So you have a lot of professionals that are staff members. You have folks that are coming in that are training as
mm-hmm.
grad and undergrad students
mm-hmm.
as well.
Wow. Yeah. We have at least five professors coming from different universities to come and volunteer and work the whole week. And we also have several researchers coming from literally all over the world. We have two researchers from Canada. We have researchers coming from Wales, because it's not often that you find a large group of children with visual impairments in one place like you do at Camp Ability. So we have several different research projects going on, from looking at a nutrition intervention to looking at the barriers of physical activity to finding out what the kids' favorite jump ropes are.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I just want to mention, too, is that since we started having a waiting list my second year, I felt really guilty about not providing camp for every child. So I have been advocating starting Camp Abilities in other places.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very fortunate right now. We have seven other Camp Abilities in different parts of the country, so that if a parent calls me, for example, last week a parent called me from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Camp Abilities in Iowa, July 22nd. So I gave the mother the gentleman's number that's running that camp, and now this child can go to camp nearby his home. And it's more likely that the friends he meets will live near him as opposed to coming all the way to our camp.
Absolutely. So with 7 different locations in this country currently, can you give us a ballpark figure on how many children per year are attending all of these camp abilities?
Oh, that's a good question. I was trying to add it up myself. I would say at least 230 children this year will be provided camp experience through these different camp abilities. For example, 2 weeks ago we had a camp in Pennsylvania, and we had 17 kids at that camp. Mm-hmm. This week, actually, as we speak, there are 22 children in Tucson, Arizona, experiencing camp ability. So, you know, throughout the summer, we have camps in Alaska and Puerto Rico, Florida, Iowa, like I said. So a lot of kids are experiencing sports for the first time because of camp abilities.
Well, that's great. Well, what are some of the requirements that children must meet in order to attend the camp?
The primary requirement is that they have to have a visual impairment. Mm-hmm. And they have to be primarily independent and have communication skills. That's all we require.
Any particular age requirements?
Oh, that's a good point. Yes, 9 to 19. Just because it's an overnight camp, you know, I want the kids to be old enough to be able to stay overnight.
Well, that's great. If people want to learn more about camp abilities, when the camps are taking place and where across the country, you had mentioned the website. Can you give that to us again?
Sure. It's www.campabilities.org. And although Camp Abilities is 2 words, the website is just 1 word, Camp Abilities.
And is there a particular number that they may be able to call if they don't want to log on to the website?
Oh, sure. They can call my number at SUNY Brockport. It's 585-395-5361. And they can also email me at lliebern@brockport.edu.
Well, Don, getting back to the IROC, I'd like to ask a few questions about the drivers and coach drivers that will be competing today.
Sure.
First, I'd like to know how many driver/coach driver teams will be out on the track.
We have 19. We have 10 in the first heat and 9 in the second heat.
Are most participants from the local area, or do people trek from across the country to come
well,
here?
Well, for drivers, we have them really is from New York and from Massachusetts. That's what we have, mainly from the 2 areas right in this area.
And what's the average age of the drivers? This sounds like, to some people that may be listening, is this a young man's sport?
No. We have one that's 72, I believe, is the oldest one, and the youngest is about 19.
Are the majority of drivers that will be competing today completely blind, or do they have some degree of usable vision?
They are visually impaired, but today we're blindfolding everybody, just so it's everybody's on an even, you know, there is no question that, well, they can see a shadow, this one, you know, knew to get out of the way, and I couldn't tell, you know, we want it all to be fair, so I made up some blindfolds, and they'll all wear a blindfold today, just so we know everybody is on an even.
Absolutely.
You know, thing, so.
What about with regard to the coach drivers? Can anybody volunteer to be a coach driver, or do they need some racing experience?
Well, in this event, no, not necessarily. We try to get, if there's somebody that a driver feels more comfortable with, you know, we can allow that. We can do that. Of course, they got to sign a waiver. But most of our drivers here are professional racers. You know, they're from the track or, you know, have their own cars and they're volunteering. They come in from other tracks. But usually we'd never have a problem getting people that want to be assistant drivers. We never have that either. Usually, actually, last year there was a couple arguments over who was going to be the co-pilot. So, yeah, it gets to be pretty good.
So we've talked about the drivers. We've talked about the coach drivers. But, of course, we can't have a race without vehicles. Can you explain to us what type of vehicles are drivers and coach drivers?
Sure. All the cars are 4-cylinder. We removed all the glass and everything, of course, in case there's a rollover or something, which does happen. Actually, I think we've had 3 rollovers, which really isn't bad when you think about it. And we put the snow fencing up so nobody can get out, you know, so while they're driving. So that's all secured safely and everything. Doors are chained shut so they won't go flying open. Mm-hmm. And all the cars are donated, all our cars.
Do you get them donated from local shops?
Local shops. People call up. I had a guy call up. He's here now. He came in and he just said, listen, he goes, I drive. I happen to have a 4-cylinder. I'd like to donate it and I'd like to be a driver. I said, fine, bring it in. He's here now. He's out on the track.
What other types of modifications are made to the cars internally? Are there extra brake pedals, things like that?
Nope. Everything's left as it is. Yeah. No, there's nothing else different.
What about the attire people will be wearing today? Are they made to wear fire suits?
Everybody will be wearing fire suits and helmets, absolutely, and gloves. Yeah, they got to be wearing that. That's part of the requirements of the track.
And do you have a safety crew in place?
Absolutely. We have ambulances. We got tow trucks. We got everything to get out there. They're right there. They're fantastic. I mean, those guys are great.
Mm-hmm. Well, take us through the schedule of events today from the perspective of our drivers. What will they be doing from the time they arrive today to the time they go home?
Well, what they first do, they have to come in, they have to sign in, get their wristbands to be in the pit area along with their escorts. We'll get them suited up. We'll figure out who's going to go in what car, who's going to be in the first heat, who's going to be in the second heat. Pretty much just it's going to be a waiting game until about 7:30 with the first race. Second race right after that, and then we're going to do a couple other races in between, then come back. About 8:30, we'll do the final. It'll be the championship round.
Can you explain for those that have never been to the Lebanon Valley Speedway here what the track looks like?
It's a 5/8-mile dirt track. It's banked where the track we were at before was flat, so they didn't have the bank to help them. So it's going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. This year, it's going to be maybe a little scary. I don't know. We're going to find out tonight.
Well, turning our attention to past IROC events, I'd be remiss as a reporter not to ask, have there been a lot of injuries in the past?
No. No. Actually, last year there was a sprained wrist, and that was the co-pilot. But we've never had an injury, no.
And do the majority of people competing today in the final race actually cross the finish line, or do a lot crash and never get to the actual finishing point?
There have been cars that have broken down or run out of gas a couple years ago and they didn't put enough in. 99% of them cross. 99% of them do. You'll see a fender fall off maybe or something like that because, you know, with the wall, they might hit a wall or something. But here, I don't see the walls like they have over at the other place, so it might be a little bit different here. The track's a little bit wider here.
Well, to switch gears, pardon the pun. In the past, have there been any particular activist groups or anything that have protested the IROC before?
No, we've had threats. You tell that. You can tell that.
Well, it was more about the radio station and the approach of the announcer, which was just in humor, but he actually was bringing a lot of awareness to visual impairment. So NFB was a little bit frustrated with that. But on the other hand, as Don was saying, the race gives people with visual impairments an opportunity to drive cars and be in a race, and it also raises money for Campability, so I couldn't really see how that was bad at all. And if
right.
people who are blind didn't like what was being said, they wouldn't have volunteered to race in the race. So,
right.
And the other cool thing about the IROC is, I think it was 2 years ago, I was here to give the trophy to the winner, mm-hmm. and it was a young man. He was probably maybe 21. And the grin on his face, it was just such an exciting experience. And the other really cool thing about being at the IROC is that all the drivers were sitting at a really long table, and all the kids were waiting in line with the shirts that they bought, and they wanted the drivers to sign their shirts. And so I thought that was a really neat aspect of this race, is that people with visual impairments are seen as race car drivers, and kids couldn't wait to get their autograph.
That is kind of neat. I'll tell you, it makes me want to compete next year's event, you know, get a little bit of fame.
Can we let Jason be the first driver for next year?
He's willing to do it. I mean, he's ready this year. I told him this year he wanted to do it.
Yeah, I chickened out on you this year.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll try to get to next year's event after I check it out for myself this
absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
There's one thing that you had mentioned which had to do with T-shirts, which segues me into what I wanted to bring up with you, Don.
Mm-hmm.
We've stated today that the IROC raises money for Campabilities, but what we haven't really touched on is how the event actually raises cash. Can you talk about some of the ways that money is going to
sure.
be raised today?
The owner of the track here, is what he's doing is he's donating $1 from each ticket bought to get into the race today to the camp. And also what we're doing is selling T-shirts. We had shirts made, 400 shirts, and partial proceeds of that is going to be donated back to the camp. And also we're doing a raffle where a lot of the drivers are donating their own merchandise, you know, parts of their cars, helmets, fire suits, they're autographing them, and we're raffling them off. And people, last year we made quite a bit of money with that. So, yeah, so we're doing that again this year. We're going to try it here, see how it goes, and I think we'll do fine. I think we're going to sell all the shirts real quick, though. I think it's going to go fast.
No, that's great. How about businesses? Can they choose to sponsor a car?
Absolutely, yeah. I have some businesses donated $500 per car just to get their name on a car. We had Walmart down in Hudson. They donated $600-some by doing a bake sale, which I'm sure you'll get an ad later, things like that. And it's been great. You know, people, they just whatever they can do to help.
Well, over the years, annually speaking, how much money does this race raise for Campabilities?
Well, with the help of the radio stations, that we've raised on between $18,000 to $23,000, I guess, on average. But this year, without the help of that, it's been really difficult. So I'm not sure how much we're going to raise this year, but we're just going to hope for the best and, you know, do what we can.
Well, I'm sure that you have your hands full with putting together the final preparations for the event today. But for those listening who may be business owners that may want to sponsor a vehicle for next year's race, or for drivers or co-drivers that may want to attend and participate in next year's event, who can they contact to get more information?
They can contact me. They can. I can give you out my email address if you'd like that.
It's sure.
doherty@research.ge.com. Or they can call me at 518-387-6213.
Well, you work very hard to put together this event every year. My final question I have on wrap-up is, with all the work that you put in, why do you consistently continue to do it?
Take one trip to the camp and you'll know why. Mm-hmm. You have to really go there to understand it. You know, once you go, you're hooked. You know, they do a phenomenal job out there. And every time I leave there, that's all I think about on the way home. You know, it's just what I've seen. You see somebody dive into the pool for the first time. You see them run around the track for the first time. You know, somebody running to first base alone for the first time. It's really important. And it's great that they're able to do that. And how can you stop that?
And then I just want to add to what Don said, too, is that we have a friend who unfortunately passed away last year, but his daughter is deafblind, and she comes to Camp Abilities. After the first year when she came to camp, he said to her, "Quinn, is there anything, you know, because you're deafblind, is there anything you feel like you can't do?" And she said, "No, there's nothing I can't do." Mm-hmm. And so when kids leave with that kind of feeling, you know, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Tell you, it's a win-win situation. You know, you have people competing in today's event that are getting the opportunity of a lifetime, in my opinion, and all of the proceeds are going to such a great cause, which is Camp Abilities. So, John, thank you so much, and Lauren, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
To learn more about Camp Abilities, find out where and when camps are being offered, and help contribute to their efforts, you're urged to visit them on the web at www.campabilities.org. Furthermore, you can contact Dr. Lieberman by calling 585-395-5361 or by way of email at lliebrm@brockport.edu. That's lliebrm@brockport.edu. When we return, Lee and Heather Stone, a father-daughter racing tandem competing in this year's IROC 500, will join us.
My name is John Parker. I'm the co-pilot.
I'm Brian Wheaton. I'm one of the IROC drivers.
All right, very cool. Brian, have you competed in this event before?
Yeah, this is my fourth year.
What's the best part about driving?
A thrill, adrenaline rush.
I believe it. In terms of being a co-driver, are you also a professional? Do you have professional racing experience as well around here?
None whatsoever. First time.
So do you think that maybe perhaps the blind drivers have it better today considering they can't see what the heck's about ready to take place?
It's no worse than driving on a throughway, I don't think.
Brian, what are you looking forward to most today, and why do you think you're going to take home that trophy?
If I didn't wreck out last year, I think I would have got it last year. But
that's awesome. Have you been visually impaired your whole life, or do you...
5 years.
Okay, so have you driven previous, like actually driven?
Yeah.
Okay, do you think that gives you kind of a leg up on those that have never driven before to go out and get
maybe a little bit, but this year we're wearing blindfolds, right?
That's a good point, so you're all even.
We're all even.
Very good. Well, thank you guys very much for the time today.
Thank you, sir.
No problem.
If blindness or low vision have limited your employment options, expand them. Envision has jobs available right now, meaningful positions in many fields, both for entry-level workers and skilled professionals. Envision offers wonderful job opportunities in management, manufacturing, retail, sales, technology, and more. Envision also provides support and follow-up to help you succeed. If you are blind or low vision, join the Envision team. We're growing as fast as your possibilities. Call Envision today at 1-888-425-7077. Open up your world. Open up to opportunity. Call Envision for choices and resources for people who are blind or low vision. Meaningful employment opportunities in diverse fields are available now. Call Envision today at 1-888-425-7072. 1-888-425-7072.
Prior to the start of the race, Jason had the opportunity to speak with Lee Stone, a driver in this year's race. Lee, accompanied by his daughter and co-pilot Heather, share their thoughts and experiences about past IROC 500 events and make their predictions about what to expect while competing in this year's IROC 500.
Can you talk a little bit about how you heard about the IROC 500 and if you've competed in the event before?
I have competed before. This will be my seventh year. I heard about it one day. A cousin called me up. He said, "You're not going to believe it, but there's a radio station looking for blind people who want to drive cars." And so I did that the first year, and it's been, as Don said earlier in a different interview, it's been history. Each year is more and more interesting. The first year was quite scary because I hadn't driven in over 30 years, but it's a great way to raise money. It's a great way for many of us people who are blind to get out on a real racetrack in real cars and just have a blast.
Well, you had mentioned that you haven't driven for over 30 years, so I would assume that in the past you had what we could deem normal vision?
Well, not normal. There would be some relatives and police officers who would tell you I should have never drove it to begin with. But, I found out after I drove for about 3 years that I was legally blind, and after several tickets, and thank God nobody ever got hurt bad in accidents and the right side of a car being totally destroyed different times, it was time for me to get off the road. So now I can enjoy myself like many of the different people just once a year, and we come to these different racetracks. This year we're at Lebanon Valley Speedway in West Lebanon, New York, and it's just great that this track has helped us with this fundraiser.
And when you tell people, family members, friends, what have you, that you're competing in today's IROC and to tell them about what it is, do they think you're completely insane or are they fairly supportive?
The first year they probably were trying to file suit to get me into an institution, but now I actually have many family members that come from a great distance away, many of their friends and supporters that think this is a great idea, and it's many of those friends that helped raise the money, which we will donate today back to Capabilities.
Well, when you're out there racing today, I mean, I can imagine there's got to be somewhat of a level of trust between each other. So what duties and responsibilities are you putting in the hands of your daughter today?
Well, one thing is to keep me away from other cars and for safety reasons, like looking out for the concrete walls. The first co-driver I had, he was explaining how my hands had to be at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock on the steering wheel. We were out for a test run on the racetrack, and all of a sudden there was a big smash. And I asked him what happened. He said, "You just hit the wall. You're really blind? You had a solid concrete wall." I said, "Yes, I'm really blind." So thank God that year we had a Toyota station wagon. We put it in reverse and we continued in the race.
We're putting the shoe on the other foot today. Heather, what are you hoping and trusting that your father will be doing out there to make sure that both of you are safe?
Well, like you said, he's driven in the past before, you know, many years ago. So at least he has an idea of what to expect behind the steering wheel. And then also him doing the races before. I think that he'll do quite well. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, as long as I can dodge him around the track, I think we'll do just fine.
That sounds good. Well, in preparing for this event and in past IROCs, have you gotten a family member's car or a friend's car? Have they let you kind of, you know, turn that car over to you and practice in a parking lot or an open field, anything like that?
I have many good friends and relatives, but none that would ever let me borrow their car. So I have to wait 364 days to come back and try it again.
Can you tell us about the mood out there on the track? Are people very serious, competitive, out there to win, or are they just out there to have a good time and a few laughs?
I think a little bit of both. There's always somebody that wants to win. I'd like to win someday, too. But once you feel that engine vibrating underneath your feet, and I mean, you roll up 2 feet, you get lined up, and then you wait until you hear, "They're off." And then, hang on, because you hear the first crunching fenders, and, "Oh, my gosh, can we find an opening?" So that's Heather's job today, to find an opening, so I can get the nose of that car out in or around someone so we can move down the track.
So you would say that when you first get strapped into that car, it's a little tense, it's a little nervous, but as things go on, everything kind of smooths out, and you kind of get used to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just hang on. And the first time you feel mud slapping up against your helmet or something, again, it's an awesome feeling. You can hear, like, the track is partially wet down. You can hear the mud flying. And who would ever think that you'd have rubber tires squealing on a dirt track? But it happens. A particular race we had a few years ago, we came around right in front of the grandstand. There were two cars stalled out. But at that year, I had a small station wagon and just an opening. So we wedged ourselves in there, and I could hear my co-driver yelling, "Punch it, punch it."
Yeah.
And what a feeling. We could feel the metal ripping, but we pushed those two cars out of the way, and put us up in fourth place instead of dead last.
No kidding. Well, how much car bumping and scraping happens when you're out there?
Quite a bit, especially in the qualifying race, because everybody wants to be in the final 10 that run.
What's the feeling when you finally get through it all? Is it a sense of relief, a sense of, hey, I want to get back in that car, and I want to do that again tomorrow? How do you feel?
Well, it is a real sense of relief. We made it. I'm still alive. You know, forget about the life insurance, which is it's kind of sad because you have to wait 364 days to do this again.
Exactly.
But once you're actually out of the car and you know, you can you're meeting the drivers you competed against and then meet the audience, it is just it's a great, great feeling.
Heather, have you watched these events from the grandstands before?
Yes. For the last 7 years, this Lisa being this the seventh, the last six, I've watched my dad actually race. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of scary, especially like you said, the first year we were kind of nervous, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not some place you want to be actually watching your father have an accident. But you know what? It's like he says, you know, it's to be able to get out there and be able to drive just like everybody else. You want that feeling.
Do you sometimes get the feeling that the drivers are fortunate for not being able to see what the heck goes on out there as opposed to their relatives and loved ones?
What I've seen in the last 6 years, yes. Like I said, like my dad, when he hit the concrete wall, you know, they get the rollovers, you know, like we're up in the stands and all you hear is, oh my God. There's been a lot of things I have seen out there that would scare a person if they're actually sighted, yes.
Lee, we've talked a lot about this, but if you could boil it down into one statement, what's the best part about getting behind that wheel and going out there and competing today?
Just knowing that, that it's my chance as a blind person to really do something active, to have fun, and at the same time raise some money for a great cause.
And for those listening that, like me, chickened out this year and didn't get up the nerve to compete in today's event, what would you say to people like me if they get the chance to compete next year?
I just say stand by the grandstands and just listen to the crunching, to the laughing, to the cheering, and most of all, listen at the end where you get the interaction with the audience, the people in the grandstands. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, Jay, you'll be back next year yourself as a driver.
Well, with all the great people I've met just here in such a short time today, I don't doubt that to be the case. So if I was a betting man, this is my final question to you, actually both of you. Why would I bet money on this race today that you folks are going to win?
Because you want to keep a job at the Journal, right? Now, we're looking at third place. If Heather can get us up in first place, we'll take it. But third is just fine.
Oh, that sounds great. Hey, any time that you get a chance to compete in an event like this, I'm sure it's just great to be here. And mm-hmm. winning is an extra sort of icing on the cake. But the most fun is actually competing, I'm sure. So with that, Heather? And Lee, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Good
thank
luck.
Thank you for inviting us, and we look forward to more of the good work with the audiojournal.net.
Having qualified to participate in the main event, we now join Lee and Heather on pit road as they get ready to race. Batten down the hatches and hold on tight as we ride along and experience a portion of the IROC 500 from their perspectives.
Mr. Stone here, getting buckled in.
Got it?
I think so.
I'm going around to get in.
The door going to stay shut? Oh, come on. They got some wires for this thing?
No, he's got a chain.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Put that. Well, go out of here. We're taking a left or a right?
I think a right.
You're all set. Got the blindfold on. You're good. You can make sure you pull it up when you're going around the track.
Guarantee you, pal, can't see. Wherever we go out there, I want you to put me in the best place so I can go as fast as hell. All right?
Okay.
And if you have to, scream left, or hard left, something like that, all right?
Okay. Just looks
wait
like
till, Jason, those guys back at the radio station hear this, they're going to crack up laughing. I can tell you guys right now, it's hotter than beat H-double-double-double-double inside this helmet. Whoa.
We got about a three and a quarter of a tank and a half a tank of gas.
I thought we'd see if we could turn into audiojournal.net, see what's going on over there.
Not bad. It's only got 38,000 miles on it.
Is that right?
Yep.
38 or 138?
No, 38.
Wow, 38,000 miles, and somebody donated a nice car. Whoever it was, thank you very much. I'll try to get it back in one piece. This is a number 5 car?
Yep.
The one was just out in the previous race?
Yep.
Oh, so we know it can run.
Yep.
Is that in drive?
Yep.
Say when.
Hold on.
Gonna punch it? Go quick?
Wait. We got people crossing in front of us. We're not gonna punch it. We're gonna go really slow to get out of the track.
Okay.
Okay, take a look. Turn out, Dad. Go.
More?
Left. Okay, go. Okay, go to your right. Left. Okay, go straight. Okay, stop.
Any cars ahead of us?
Three
cars ahead of us?
Yes.
Okay, are we on the far outside?
Yes.
Hey, you son of a... It's right in the back of me! I'll give you the reverse. Sorry about that, folks. Some guy ran into rear end of me. Gonna get a countdown. Your flag up or something? Doing good, kid. Keep going.
Slow down.
Where are we? In front of the grandstands again?
Yeah.
Well, we did good, and we're not done yet. What?
Okay, thank you.
What?
We're first, Dad.
Really?
Yes, we are. We got to stay in first.
And yeah, we've got people ahead of us right now, right?
No. One guy back there smoking a lot. We might not make it.
All I know is this thing's got one hell of a kick once you punch it, then it goes, and then all of a sudden it's like a fast overdrive. You feel it going again, and I haven't... What's he going to do, another countdown?
I think so. Go! Why are you coming? Left! Okay, left, straight!
While Team Stone were in first place for a number of laps, when all was said and done, Lee and Heather didn't finish in the money. Nonetheless, like the rest of the driver-coach teams, they were thankful for the opportunity to participate and above all raise funds for such a worthy cause as Camp Abilities. Stick around. When we return, we'll talk with this year's iRock 500 winner Marty Kelly. As we go to break, we'll leave you with a few words from Link Pettit, a professional stock car driver and co-pilot in this year's event.
Have you been a co-driver in past iRocks before?
No, I haven't. I've actually worked with Don Doherty just doing all the logistical stuff. I've raced myself professionally here at Lebanon Valley at Fonda.
Beautiful.
I wanted to try the other side of the fence this time just to help some of these people out, because a lot of them I met last year at Fonda. They're fantastic people, and it's a great time for them. They really have a good time.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you one final question. As a gentleman who's raced on this track legitimately and professionally, sitting on the other side of things, racing with someone who was flying folded, What's worse? Do you get more anxious when you're at a race yourself competing, or were you a heck of a lot more nervous than in that passenger seat today?
You know, I really wasn't nervous because they give us a little bit of a leeway grabbing the wheel if we really have to, and I did. I must admit I grabbed the wheel a few times just to save my own life. To be honest with you, I was more nervous for him because he's never done any of this, and I'll tell you, when you're in a sprint car or modified, your nerves tend to go away once the car starts up, and that's basically what happened here.
No, it's understandable. Hey, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks.
This is a public service announcement from the Audio Journal. The Lighthouse's information and resource service provides accurate, up-to-date information about vision impairments, eye diseases, vision rehabilitation, and adaptive devices. You can find services to help you continue to be a productive member of society despite vision problems. Call the Lighthouse Resource Service at 1-800-829-0500. More than 30,000 people take advantage of the Lighthouse information each year. And just a reminder, all people age 45 and older should visit an eye care professional for an annual checkup, which includes tests for glaucoma, distance viewing, intermediate viewing, and reading. If you have a family history of eye disease, you may need to see an eye doctor more frequently. Again, call the Lighthouse organization at 1-800-829-0500 for a low vision specialist and other resources in your area. This has been an announcement from the Audio Journal.
Several days after the race, Jason caught up with Marty Kelly, this year's winner and two-time champion of the IROC 500, at his home in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. As president of MD Blind Motorsports, Mr. Kelly has been promoting competitive auto racing among the sight and peer for years. In this interview, Marty explains the organization, mentions how he prepares for the IROC 500, discusses a close call he had while driving in this year's race, and much more.
Marty, how did you first hear about the IROC, and how many IROCs have you competed in the past?
I heard about it the first year. I was listening to PIX 106, or local radio station, and they were talking about doing a paper bag race, where the driver would have a paper bag over his head, and one of the DJs said, you know, if we're going to do that, why not have blind people drive the cars? And that's truly when the magic started. I was able to call in and get registered. That was the first year, and I've been involved every year.
And who is your co-driver for this year's event, and have both of you competed before together?
Yes, my co-driver is Mark Burke. He's been in the last five with me. He was at the first one, but wasn't able to be my co-driver.
Do you find it easier to compete with the same co-driver year after year, and if so, why?
Absolutely. Not only has Mark been my co-driver year after year, but he's a personal friend, so he's used to being around with me. He knows how to navigate me very well and just have a certain amount of comfort level, you know, just knowing that I have such a good rapport with him.
Well, if you could, considering you did take the checkered flag this year, could you tell us about what happened in this year's race, kind of what position you started off in and any of the highlights that you may remember?
Okay, well, in the first heat race, we started second to last. That race went off real quick, no cautions. It was very fast-paced. We won the heat race, which put us into the feature. In the feature, they started us last. About halfway through, we got down in turn 3 and 4, and another car made contact with us, which spun us out. When we started to spin, your first reaction is, you know, oh no, it's all over. Going to end up against a wall or sideways on the track. But with Mark's aid, we were able to do a 360 and keep going. Then we just hammered down, and we were fortunate enough to win the feature and take the trophy and the checkered flag.
What kind of speeds were you hitting on the straightaways?
I was told we were going about 80 miles an hour. You know, naturally, we had two real good laps where we were able to keep a clean line where we didn't have any obstacles or other cars to get around.
Well, I noticed that you were one of the few drivers this year
that brought your own car. Can you tell us about the make and model of the vehicle and perhaps discuss the paint job for those that may be listening that are interested?
Sure. The car we used this year was a four-cylinder Pontiac Sunfire GT 2.4 with an altered interior for safety, you know, complete roll cage, race seats, harnesses. In the past couple of years, we've been carrying the colors white, orange, and green, kind of like the Irish flag. Mm-hmm. We carry either the number zero or the double zero, which have eyeballs in between, inside the zero. You know, they look like eyes. Have several local businesses that sponsor the car, so you have the stickers on there, which really make it look like a race car once you get stickers on it.
Not only from an appearance standpoint, but as a person such as myself who was listening to the event, your car sounds like a finely tuned hot rod. Can you discuss what you do to get that sound? Do you do a lot of tweaking to the car to give it its ultimate performance?
Performance a little bit. Most of the tweaking that we do is in suspension and handling. Mm-hmm. That car basically just has a straight pipe on it with a canister. So basically, there's no mufflers on it. It is loud, and that does increase performance a little bit.
And you had mentioned that you had made several safety modifications to the car, such as roll cages and so forth. With that in mind, when you spend all that time customizing the car, making it as safe as possible, does that give you a great deal of confidence when you go out there on the track and compete?
Oh, absolutely. The safety definitely gives you the confidence. You know, over the years, we've been on our roof, been sideways, up against the wall, and, you know, every time we've walked away from the car, and, you know, I feel that if you didn't take the time to put the safety in it, that, you know, me or my co-driver possibly could have been injured.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only did you win this year, but you had also won this event previously back in 2003?
Correct. The second year was the first year we built our own car, and we were fortunate to win it then as well.
As a two-time champ of the IROC, I'd like to ask you a couple questions about how you go about preparing for the event. Well, first one is, considering you own your own car, do you try to get to the track a day or two ahead of time and get out there and do a couple of practice laps if possible?
No, the tracks won't let us get out there early in practice. It would be nice. The advantage that I do have is I'm able to do ride-along programs mm-hmm. in other races, which gives me the idea of the layout of the track, the transition of the corners, and whoever's driving the car that I'm riding with on these laps is verbally telling me what's going on the whole time. And mm-hmm. we'll sometimes kind of do a count thing where, you know, we're on the straightaway, 1-1000, 2-1000, you know, and I know by 6-1000 that we're going to start taking our first left-hand turn.
Right. How about driving in a safe location with either your coach driver, a family member, or a friend, considering you do own your own car? Do you ever get a chance to take it out to a safe place and practice a little bit?
Occasionally, but when we do, it's not with a race car. It's with a regular street car where we can get in a remote parking lot or, you know, something like that.
Have you had any interesting reactions from either friends or family members if they were acting as your co-pilot? Do they get a little freaked out the first time they get in the car and they're in the passenger seat and you're in the driver's seat?
Yeah, actually it was, I don't know if it was the second or the first year of IROC. We had been practicing quite a bit and we were in a Bandit parking lot going around in a circle and my coach driver told me to stop. So I put the brakes on. He says, "What's up?" He says, "There's a cop rolling over to us, Marty." I figure he was joking, and sure enough, the cop pulled right up to my side, and says, "What?" He asked me what I was doing, and I tried to explain myself. I told him, "Sir, I'm a blind individual who's going to be in a stock car racing, and we're just practicing." His response was, "Are you blind drunk?" I says, "No, sir," and I, you know, explained that I was going to get out of the car, and once I got out and he seen my white cane and whatnot, he was a little interested about it and talked about the race for a moment, and then he suggested that we went somewhere else to practice.
That brings up the other question now. Have you always had a vision impairment, or have you had normal vision at some point in the past?
No, I had 20/20 vision most of my life. About 9 years ago, I lost my vision to diabetic retinopathy.
Mm-hmm. previous to your vision loss, had you been involved in motorsports in any type of capacity, or is motorsports something that you picked up after your vision began to decline?
No, it was something I was around for the majority of my life, whether it was helping with local race teams or as a spectator. I never could get enough of it. The ironic thing is, as a sighted person, I didn't have the skills to be a top-notch competitive driver. Mm-hmm. I had the skills to wrench a car, or do setups, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But then once I went blind and started actually racing cars, that had all changed, and now I'm doing fairly well at it.
Not only have you been driving, but you've also been promoting driving. And what I'm alluding to is the fact that you started an organization by the name of MD Motorsports. Could you explain to us what the purpose of MD Motorsports was and if that organization is still in existence?
Sure. We are still in existence. We're not as active as we used to be. We're kind of slowed down right now and kind of let it try to take its own course for a while. But basically what we were doing was promoting the idea of the visually impaired to be able to race cars at a safe and competitive level at all of our local tracks. We traveled all throughout New England with vision-impaired tandem race cars to talk to track owners and promoters and just the race community in general.
Well, I think it's a great thing. Now, if there were people out there that are listening to this broadcast that would like to support blind motorsports and would like to become involved with it, do you have any suggestions on how they may be able to make their voices heard to say, yeah, this is something that we want, this is something that's viable?
One good way would be just getting the word out amongst the race community, the people that are involved with racing. For it to truly work, I think that's what it's going to take, is other people that are already involved with racing and have a passion for it to step aboard and, you know, help guys build cars, help guys transport cars, and that type of thing.
Well, getting back to the IROC, I had heard that oftentimes, IROC drivers will pay a visit to Camp Abilities, which, of course, is the camp for blind and deaf children that the IROC raises money for. Have you ever had the opportunity to go up there and visit with the kids?
No. I hope to go up next year for opening ceremonies. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good ride for me. It's about 4 hours from home, so up and back, it'd be a long ride, but, you know, I stay in contact with people from the camp and, you know, aware of what's going on there and all the good they're doing, and continue to do whatever I can do to support that.
Do you have any helpful advice for individuals that may be thinking about competing on next year's IROC, considering you've won it twice in a row? Any kind of words of wisdom you may have for them?
The words of wisdom I have are probably more for the co-drivers. You know, I think the blind people, you just get behind the wheel and listen to your co-driver good. And, you know, we've come up with such a good system that I'd be really happy to share it with anybody. A mistake that I see a lot of the co-drivers do is if they hit the wall, they grab the wheel, which at first sounds like the logical thing to do, but it's too late once you've hit the wall. And, you know, that results in broken wrists, broken thumbs, them type of injuries for the co-drivers. And most of them are racers that race week in and week out, and they have a tough time racing if their hand's broken.
Yeah, I would say that would definitely be a handicap. Well, the final question I have for you is just, what is it about auto racing that keeps you coming back for more and keeps you coming back to the IROC year after year?
It's the adrenaline, the excitement of it. Racing in general does that for me, but the IROC just has so much more special meaning. You know, I stay in contact with a lot of other blind drivers, and, you know, we talk about it all year long and just wait for it. And anytime any of us are a little down or anything, we talk about IROC, and it brings the spirits right back up. And, you know, naturally the camp, when it all boils down, that's what it's about. It's about the kids at the camp and raising money for them and giving them the opportunity to do things that they normally don't get to do, similar to us guys getting to race cars, because normally we wouldn't have that chance either.
Marty Kelly, thank you so much for allowing us to stop by today and get your perspective about the IROC and events to come.
Thank you.
For more information about registering to compete in next year's IROC 500, or to sponsor or donate a vehicle that will be used in the race, please contact event organizer Don Daugherty. Mr. Daugherty can be reached by phone at 518-387-6213 or by way of email at Daugherty, Daugherty, at research.ge.com. Stay with us. We'll be back to wrap up the program after this important announcement.
Have you been unable to find a print Braille edition of your child's favorite book? Well, the National Braille Press Children's Club has it for the same price as the print edition. Membership is free, and it's only a phone call away. So call the National Braille Press Children's Braille Book Club at 1-800-548-7323. That's the National Braille Press Children's Braille Book Club at 1-800-548-7323. Literacy begins at home.
You have been listening to Out of Sight XYZ, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Reading Network. We are here to serve people with print disabilities 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We'd like to thank our guests, Don Daugherty, Dr. Lauren Lieberman, Marty Kelly, along with Lee and Heather Stone for their insights about the IROC 500 and camp abilities. We would also like to extend our gratitude to Jamie Billings for his assistance with recording this edition of Out of Sight XYZ and for composing the music you've heard throughout the program. If you have any comments about this broadcast or would like to purchase a copy of today's program, we would love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 508-797-1117 or email us at info@audiojournal.net. Out of Sight is heard on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 5 p.m. right here on Audio Journal. On behalf of all of us at Audio Journal, thank you for tuning in and listening.